We'll take questions later. Only two per person. Okay. My next, the way we designed this program, by the way, is we first wanted to start off with the legislative context so that you can appreciate how some of the efforts that have been made in the case studies that we're going to present to you now were addressed, some of these issues that Marilyn touched on. So, and we wanted to start from general to more localized, and that's why our next speaker is from out of town. Tim McCormick is from Santa Monica. Tim is the manager of planning and performance at Santa Monica Big Blue Bus. Prior to that, he was the director of planning at North County Transit District in Oceanside, San Diego County. And before that, he was the manager of planning at Rhode Island Public Transit Authority. Tim has extensive experience in bus and paratransit planning, as well as commuter rail, light rail, and ferry services. He lives in South Los Angeles with his husband, Charlie, father-in-law, Juan, and two rescue dogs. With that introduction, Tim.
He asked for a bio. I was like, I guess that goes in. I don't know. Anyway, we are ADA paratransit-using household. My father-in-law goes every day on ADA paratransit. Thank you. I'm going to start my own timer.
Okay.
But what we have in Santa Monica is an overlay service on top of ADA paratransit, what you might think of as a dial-a-ride service, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. How does this work? So in 2016, we're coming up to the normal rebid process of our dial-a-ride, and we had six vans, and it had been operating for a long, long time, carrying the same number of people every year, and the same people were taking it. And it was about $23, $24 a ride cost. It was a 50-cent fare. And we wanted to see if we could do a little better than that. There was widespread dissatisfaction in the community with the service. We only had a few people who really used it regularly. Most of the people had suffered the indignity of being turned away a few times because six vans can only carry so many people. And although we had thousands of members, we had very few people who took the service on a regular basis. And our average occupancy was 1.1 passengers an hour. Now, you know, we would go back to the contractor over and over again and say, why can't you get more people in the van? And the truth of the matter was, after I beat them up long enough to find out, is that when you start to get more than one or two passengers an hour, you start to get a lot of complaints because you're invariably not making it with the van to where you're supposed to be. And they said, look, we just want to keep complaints to a minimum. This is a contracted service. This is what we can do and not have people complain. And that's where we were. So I thought, well, that's going to be really, really tough to solve with a contracted service. So at that time, in 2016, we had 3,200 members who had signed up for the service, and 157 of them were using it more than once a month. We only had about 400 people use it in the last year it ran, and 86% of the registered members in the service didn't use it at all. So we realized that actually nobody dials phones anymore, so it's time to retire Dial-A-Ride as a name. The intern working on the program didn't even know how to touch a dial phone. So we decided to go for MODE, Mobility on Demand Every Day, and change the branding and also rebid the service. And we ended up with a contract award to Lyft for the ambulatory trips. So we kept the program largely the same at the beginning. It was still on demand, residents only, 60 years or older, or 18 years older with a disability. Weekday service all day, limited service on the weekends, City of Santa Monica limits, and four medical centers, and we kept the 50-cent fare. So everything kind of stayed the same, except that all of a sudden, instead of six white vans, we had a whole bunch of Lyft cars and two white vans. So 10% of our users prior to the changeover had been needing the wheelchair van for the wheelchair lift. So we retained 33% of the previous wheelchair capacity by keeping two vans on the street in hopes that we would be able to meet the demand of a population that had showed themselves to be 90% ambulatory. And here's what happened in the first year. We in the last year of Dial-A-Ride, we ran 21,000 trips under our $600,000 budget. And in the first year of Mode, we ran 55,000 trips in the same budget. So our average cost per ride, when we commingled the van and the TNCs, went from $22.45 down to $12.06. Wow. So it's a big, big change. We also obviously revamped our scheduling system and dispatch. Because for one thing, in reservation, because you could make a reservation to the Lyft app, and I'll go through that, but we modernized our phone room, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. So there were some other changes. Oh, here's the changes. So we had virtually unlimited capacity. The payment and booking options were new, obviously through the app. We also set up for the unbanked the possibility of having a debit account. We had accommodation for people with no smartphones. We had a phone room set up. And the customer experience was much improved. And the automated dispatch, reservation and dispatching, we got a subcontractor to Lyft named Campus Safe Ride, which I think they've shortened their name to Safe Ride now. And they were doing the dispatching to the vans. So we wanted to ensure that we had equity or something approximating equity. So as I mentioned, we had the call center. If you didn't have a data plan, we had the debit account for the unbanked. We had the two vans on the street. And our goal was zero refusals. We're at about one refusal a month. It's always the same day, and it's usually in the middle of the day. But mostly we're at zero refusals. So in order to understand what happened, I just want to explain this slide a little bit. The left-hand side of the slide is the last 6 months of Dial-A-Ride, and that's how many rides a month we took. And that medium blue represents the van. And then on the right are the new service. So the bottom of the bar represents the van. The next part of the bar, that's a dark purple going up, represents that is people calling the phone room and asking for a Lyft car. So they either don't have a smartphone or they don't have a credit card, and they need to call the phone room, but we dispatch a Lyft car. So the van now carries about 10% of the riders. About 25% of the people are calling for a Lyft car with a telephone call, and then the top of that bar, 65%, represents people using the app on their phone. So their phone is backloaded with a coupon, and as long as they stay inside city limits and during the day, their fare was 50 cents on Lyft. And they were booking their own rides, and we were never seeing them because they were just out and about. And ridership went up precipitously. And the enrollment started to grow because word of mouth started to go around the community that it was no longer the same insufferable Dial-A-Ride that we had been running for years, and now it actually worked. Even the van rides were better because we offloaded so many people off the vans that now the van could actually be used what it was intended for, because it was the only vehicles we had with a lift, a wheelchair lift. So went up to 1,500 members in the first 9 months. And, I skipped a slide, I'm sorry, hold on. Let's see, that was the ridership, I'm going to go back. Yeah, right, so that was the first 9 months. The enrollment went up in the first 9 months. And my finance director started to say, we're going to quickly exceed budget at this rate, and we're never going to run out of vehicles because Lyft has a million vehicles, so what's going to happen now? And when we looked at the statistics, we realized that we were only serving a very small part of the community, and we had 23,000 seniors in the community, and we thought, well, probably a third of them are going to sign on by the time we're done, so we've got to do something. So that was our budget projection at 9 months. We realized we were going to quickly exceed budgets. We looked by 2021 to be $1.3 million, and people started to say, this was a really bad idea. See what you did? You ruined Dial-A-Ride by making it useful. Rather than do that, we assembled a stakeholder group, which was basically the Senior Commission, the Disability Commission, the Mobility Group from City Hall, and some people from the Transit Authority, and we began to have a discussion about what we were going to do. And one of the things they talked about immediately, it will come as a surprise to most of you that a lot of poor people live in Santa Monica. They're certainly not moving to Santa Monica now, but there's a lot of poor people who live in Santa Monica who have been there for a very long time because we have rent control. So when we looked at our members by self-reported income, 57% of them were living on less than $25,000 a year, another 16% between 25 and 36. So, you know, that's 57 and 16, 67, 73% are what in Santa Monica constitutes poor, since you can't even get a cup of coffee for $6 anymore. So, you know, these people were in survival mode in the community. So the stakeholder group said, protect the most vulnerable, share the opportunity for mobility widely, and stop frivolous overuse. We had a 60-year-old cutoff, and we had people going to work who were making $200,000 a year on Dial-A-Ride, on Mode, because it became so good, and it was 50 cents. They were like, oh, we're not driving anymore. We're just, you know, still working and going and using up the resources. The stakeholder group was like, we got to stop that. We got to move on. So we put a whole bunch of stuff on the table, all kinds of things, because we didn't want to do anything dramatic. We thought we should do a bunch of little things that maybe would add up to getting cost control, cost containment. And they didn't want to adjust the hours of operation or reduce the service area, but they were willing to do everything else. So we said, instead of riding privately on Lyft, you're going to all be sharing. We're going to freeze enrollment for 90 days. And the reason we did that was because we were going to introduce an age-differentiated fare, a low-income fare and a regular fare, and we needed to go back and re-register everybody for low-income fare. We raised the age requirement from 60 to 65 and grandfathered everybody into the program who was already there. We used to give 60 trips a month. We're down to 30 trips a month now, which is enough for most people. Our average is only about 8. We raised the fares. The low-income fare is 75 cents and the regular fare is 150. And we asked people who were not in wheelchairs or otherwise disabled, who still insisted on the van because they liked the van driver so much, to please start using Lyft. And that was a successful endeavor. So that's the cost containment changes. In September of 2019, ridership dropped, but has started up again because as soon as we finished with our enrollment freeze, enrollment started up again. Let me see how much time I have left. Do you know how much time?
Still got 7 minutes.
Okay, my phone shut off. Enrollment grows. We're still registering 80 to 100 people a month. It hasn't slowed down at all. You can see the line there is pretty steady. And so I'll come back to the slide that I started with. 157 people at the end of Dial-A-Ride were using the service more than once a month. Today, we are 622 people using the service more than once a month. Now, we do have 2,400 members, and you might wonder why we have so many members and not that many of them using it. A lot of people register for this program and tell us it's a preparation for the point in their lives at which they don't feel they'll be able to be ambulatory anymore in their own car. So a lot of people are registering and then showing up 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months later to actually take their first ride. That's just been the way it is. But we're very, very happy with the increase in the number of people who have found it useful. It's a 296% increase in the number of people traveling at least once a month under the same budget. So, lessons learned. TNCs don't offer fixed pricing. The first RFP I put out asked for fixed pricing. Nobody bid. The last thing you want to do if you're a government employee is put out an RFP and have to redo it. I'm sure you've all been through this horror. So you actually have to get your finance officer to sign on to a contract without pricing. It is the most bizarre thing in the world. No, I promise you, there's no pricing, but I'm going to save you a ton of money. It's like, you know, it takes some trust, okay, because they can raise their prices at any time, any day of the week. We pay surge pricing. We pay whatever they're charging in the moment, but we're still saving a lot of money. So that takes some discussion internally. We did a mandatory 20-minute one-on-one program orientation with each passenger at the beginning. We tried to put 50 people in a room and teach them how to use their smartphones. And you have to remember that most of our passengers are elderly. It was an absolute chaotic disaster and left them disempowered. It really did. It left people very, very emotional and upset about how that went. So we hired a really handsome young man, because it's LA, and most of our passengers were women, and that was a complete coincidence, but later I realized it was smart. And he sat with each person for 20 minutes if they didn't know how to use the smartphone and use the Lyft app and taught them how. It saved so much time in the phone room. Now, we did have people with cognitive disability who came back and needed that session repeated 3 times, a few. But even many, many, many people who needed it repeated did get through and start to use the app. We also, by the way, allowed family members to load the app on their smartphone for their parents or relative. So I could have it for my father-in-law on my phone, and I could make his reservations. I could talk to him on the phone, make his reservations, and monitor his movement on my phone. So we allow any family member to act as the liaison for the smartphone transaction. We started with private, and we went to shared rides on TNC. There are those who thought that an elderly Santa Monican getting in the back seat with a young surfer who smelled like marijuana wasn't going to work. It works fine. We had a few questions on the first day. We had one very, very wealthy couple quit the program, and I told them that I was okay with that because they were ambulatory and could use Lyft with their own money. I hope this isn't being recorded, but anyway. But we only had one family, we only had one couple quit. Everybody else got used to it. And you know what? They had some delightful conversations in the back seat of their Lyft car with other people, and they got more integrated into the community. People are telling us this is bringing them back into the community from isolation. And shared Lyft cars, when they're working their best, are an opportunity for social interaction. And it's worked out fine. I have noticed something that we have people who use Lyft 5 times in a row, 6, 7, 8 times in a row, and then they call up and say, we need the van today. And I said, oh, did you fall and break your leg? No, I have to go to the grocery store and I can't lift the groceries in and out of the Lyft car myself, and can't trust that the driver will help me. So we have to send the van. The average cost on the van trip is very expensive. And it's only because they need assistance. They don't actually need the wheelchair lift, they need assistance, and they know the driver in the van will give it to them. So there's a gap between what people need and what they're getting on TNC, and if we think of creative ways to fill that gap, we don't have to use the vans for groceries, we can use them for wheelchairs, which I think is a better use of funds. We've had public meetings on other subjects at the Transit Authority. Mode is not on the agenda, TNCs are not on the agenda, and people come up to the microphone and tell us that they've regained spontaneity in their life. One woman said, you know, living on my fixed income, I don't have any social status anymore. I'm only on public assistance. I have so little left of what I was. And when I got out that first day and I got into a Prius instead of that white van, I felt like a normal person for the first time in a long time, and I needed to come down here and tell you that. She's like, that's my social status that I used to have, that I used to do what everybody else did, and I regained a little bit of it with this program, so I'm really happy. We've had a lot of people come out to public meetings and tell us that it changed them in ways that they didn't anticipate. Just getting normalized again. Customer satisfaction has been great. Decreased costs have been important. And the usage is up and shows for itself. And so we feel like there's no going back now as long as we can keep these partnerships moving forward and moving in the right direction and fixing the deficits that have been spoken about earlier today and getting things where they need to be.
Thanks very much, Tim. I think you'll agree that was a really fascinating case study, and I'm sure there'll be many questions afterwards, but Sean has a clarification question.
Well, I was wondering, Tim, it was a great presentation. I'm wondering if you could talk talk a little bit more about the use of the wheelchair accessible vehicles, and are those on-demand vehicles, and how did you set that up exactly?
Thank you, Sean.
We own them. I'm not sure what on-demand means in that sense.
Well, in the same way that TNCs are on-demand, you can get a ride with
them. Okay. Like that.
The same day, within 5 to 20 minutes.
Yeah. So the vans have a tablet in them where we can live program in trips that change the rights and lefts for the drivers. So technically, we have the capacity to insert trips. And the community is small enough that we take 3 reservations an hour. We, as I said, when people call, we've only had to refuse about 1 trip a month. Now, I think what you're referring to is, if someone calls, are they getting, can they call 5 minutes before they want to go? Not realistically. That we haven't gotten there yet. A lot of our, we've told community members, we're not at the point where we need a third van, like we don't actually need more capacity, and you can call that morning. Most of them are still reserving in advance because they're just used to it or comfortable with it, but if people are a little bit flexible to 20 minutes either side, we've been able to accommodate most. Well, all but 1. I asked, I said, how many? And they go, you know, it's sticking at about 1 a month, but we really have to say, no, we can't do this. But it is, you know, 20 minutes either way. But yeah, there are a few people who still call same day, and they are accommodated. It's not 5 minutes.
And one more in the back. Roberto's coming.
Does that answer your question? I'm not sure I understand what goes on elsewhere. So.
I think what you're saying is that mostly the wheelchair accessible vehicles are doing advance reservations, right, with a 20-minute window on either side of the target pickup time, and then there's some same-day availability if there's space available on the vehicle.
There's been enough same-day availability that we don't turn anybody away.
Except for that 1 a month.
Yeah, right, about, and it usually happens, someone gets a doctor's appointment's cancellation, they might call in the middle of the day and say, do you have anything left? And at that point, the day's booked. This is what they tell me in the phone room. They're not tracking, they say, we haven't been tracking missed service refusals because we have so few of them.
So Tim, just to be clear, so for those relatively small number of trips that are same day on the vans, is that about a 20-minute on each side window that you're able to accomplish?
Yeah, so they have 3 slots on each van, and they can see them on the screen. So they're looking for a slot that they can plug this into because they have 1 on the hour, 20 and 30 on one van, and then 10, 50, and whatever the other 10 minutes on the other van. And they tell me 99.9% of the time, they tell people what's available, they're able to make something work. But again, it's not necessarily exactly what they asked for.
Right. Okay, next question, please.
Yeah, I was wondering, I noticed you didn't mention anything about service animals, and I was wondering how that's worked with the Lyft drivers.
You know, I haven't heard a lot of complaints. I'd like to answer a question like that with data, and I'd love to go back and see how many complaints we've received. I haven't heard a lot of things about it. I do think the drivers in our community have figured out that the mode program, of course the customers are telling them they're riding for 75 cents. They're figuring out over time that there's actually a program in our community where people are getting these coupons. So I think it's self-sorted a little bit, but I never heard a lot of complaints about service animals being refused. I'd have to go look at the data, though, to really answer your question fully and find out. But I haven't heard anything.
Can you get back to us?
Sure. I can pull the data since the program started and see how many service animal complaints we've received.
And we'll share that information.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're required to take them.
Yeah.
That's me, they will.
Great.